Next submitter on our list is Raywin Van Gogh. So, good afternoon and welcome. We've read your original submission. Thank you for providing that. You don't need to read that out to us because we've already read it. I see you've tabled some material today.
Yes, I have. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and panel members. I'm Raywin Van Gogh. I'm a dairy farmer from the Waituna catchment. As a result of the 42A report, there have been some significant changes to the original proposed plan. So my comments are going to relate mainly to the Section 42A report. With regards to physiographics, whether they should be in or outside the plan, I'm not actually qualified to really make that statement, but I do know that there are some exciting happenings coming up with relation to physiographics. On farm, the Waituna Partners Group has received funding from the government, and part of that will be used to carry out a physiographic project with farmers in the catchment. So I hope that whatever happens with physiographics in the plan, there is going to be some allowance for as science changes and technology allows physiographics to be developed, that can be accepted within the plan. A general comment is wherever in the 42A report they refer to setbacks changing from 5 metres to 3 metres, I disagree with that. Our farm is largely all flat and I believe that setback should remain as 3 metres as their 5 metre setback on the flat paddock to me is just too wide, it's unnecessary. The other thing is, and I noticed that one of the panel members has already raised the question of using the words fully mitigated. I disagree and I believe that the words fully mitigated and avoid, wherever mentioned, should be deleted, and I refer to the Horizons court case on that. I apologise too for the rather colourful speaking notes that you all have received. The colours were mainly for my benefit. Now, paragraph 7195, page 204, relating to tile drains. I'll just go back to the very last comment that the writer of the report states, and it relates to tile maps. If the information is recorded but only retained by the landholder, it becomes redundant and likely of no use to future owners or occupiers of the land. I would suggest that the writer of this report was extremely naive as to the value that farmers and landholders place in having maps such as tile maps. I do believe that these maps can be retained on farm and produced whenever Environment Southland requires it, because I know at the time we went for our renewal of our consent, we had to produce these maps anyway, and as consents were renewed every 10 years, I think I don't see the need for Environment Southland to receive these any earlier than at times of consent renewal. With regards to paragraph 7.479, page 254, in relation to the intensive winter grazing season. I disagree that it should be brought back to the 1st of May. It should remain at the 30th of May. I know in our farming operation we are still milking well into May, and at times we've milked right through till the end of May. So I don't believe that there's any reason for intensive winter grazing season to be brought forward. Paragraph 7.482, page 255, relates to the notified rule 20, where sheep, beef and deer farms between 20 and 100 hectares are explicitly excluded from preparing a nutrient budget. The writer of the report makes the comment, in my opinion, the same argument applies to larger, extensive sheep, beef and deer properties. I'm absolutely gobsmacked that they would make that statement, because those types of farming make up the majority of pastoral land use in Southland, and to have them excluded from a nutrient budget justifies common sense. Nutrients should be about total catchment load, and therefore no farming system should be exempt. The Southland Economic Project on page 169 shows via a graph five of the seven deer farms had N losses between 20 and 50 kilograms of nitrogen a hectare. And these are not insignificant numbers, especially when extrapolated over the size of some of these farms. This is my personal crusade. Pond drop testing, rule 35. Paragraph 7.951, page 364. Completely disagree with what the recommendation is, which is either a 3 or 5 year period to perform the test, depending on the construction materials, which should enable sufficient time for pond drop tests to be undertaken. I question the capacity and practice for the recommendation to be viable. There are approximately 1,000 dairy farms in Southland. If everyone had to have a pond drop test within a 5 year time frame, that would be one test every 1.85 days, including weekends. If it was 1,000 tests over 15 years, the maximum referred to in paragraph 7.95, it would still require a PDT to be carried out every 5.47 days, including weekends. However, if lead detection systems were accepted as a legitimate option, an alternative to a PDT, this could alleviate any capacity issues for PDTs in those systems that didn't have a leak detection system. And referring to the following paragraph, 7.952, the writer states, while the use of inspection chambers is encouraged, they only identify leaks above the chambers which do not cover the entire surface of the storage. Therefore, I do not recommend an exemption is included for systems with leak detection systems. I'm not an expert witness, so my comments are purely based on anecdotes of what we have on our farm. I challenge that statement. On our pond, the base is sloped towards the corner of a pond, and therefore any leak will eventually run into the overflow drainage chamber around the base, and we also have it flowing through the middle of the pond. Therefore, any leak will eventually show up in the inspection sump. I stand by my comment and my submission that IPEN state, and I've given you a copy of the IPEN's pond performance considerations, which contains this piece of statement, and they state a pond drop test may provide a more conclusive measure of water tightness, but only if there is a major leak. However, an effective leak detection system will provide a much earlier indication of leakage. It is disappointing that the recommendation in the Section 42A report does not accept the IPEN statement and dismisses a LDS as having no relevance nor advantage in environmental management. If a farmer with an LDS conducts checks of their inspection sump, they will pick up a pond leak earlier than a 3 or 5 year pond drop test will. If the recommendation of 7.952 stands, then it will potentially encourage farmers with leak detection systems not to bother checking them and only rely on the 5 yearly test, as they would have spent considerably more money in attempting to use best practice, only to find Environment Southland does not consider the added expense of an LDS has created any additional environmental advantage, even though IPEN states it allows earlier detection. Environment Southland should be encouraging farmers to use an LDS when upgrading effluent systems, not ignoring them. I see this as no different to farmers requiring or good management practice using fail-safe devices on effluent systems. At the annual Environment Southland on-farm compliance inspection, written records for inspection sumps could be verified, and at consent renewal, written records of inspection could become a condition when an LDS exists. Writing the requirement for a pond drop test into the plan can hinder innovation and use of new technology in leak detection. For example, IPEN states in their 5.1 statement of pond performance considerations, an alternative LDS technique that is relatively new to New Zealand is electric field testing. Water as a conductive medium is applied to a membrane surface, and a tear or leak in the membrane creates a fault that can be detected. I believe that LDS systems should be accepted as an alternative to a pond drop test, and there should also be ability within the plan to accept any other technology that may come through in time. Just a comment of statements in the report that I do support 7.406, 7.477 have broad agreement of combining rules 21 and 22. I support changes made, except from where the dates change from 30th of May to 1st of May, and setbacks from increased from 3 to 5 metres. I support Rule 24, and I support the changes to Rule 32. Same for Rule 38. I support the changes made there. I also would like to say that I still confirm my original submission relating to Appendix N and nutrient budgets. I don't believe nutrient budgets should be based on soil nutrient tests, and I have some doubts as to the validity of using Overseer as well. I do think, however, that what Environment Southland is attempting to do with this report is moving us in the right direction, but we need to look at the detail of some of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for taking the time to look at the Section 42A report and the detail that you have done, and then to come back with us with your comments on that. That's very helpful. So thanks for doing that. I imagine that took quite a long time.
Speed reading.
We'll see if we have any questions for you. Lloyd, starting at your end.
Just one question around the pond drop test. Other submitters have actually said to us there's three types of ponds out there. One's a clay line pond, one's a line pond, and one's above ground storage. And they have argued that the two of those, there are systems in place that would not necessarily need a drop test for.
I would agree with that.
You would agree with that?
Yes, definitely. We have an LDS system on our farm. Also, I believe environmentally they are better, because if you notice an effluent leak coming into your sump, you can immediately shut it down, and then bring in a slurry tanker and just pump the leaking effluent straight out of that sump rather than it going to ground or going into waterways.
Thank you. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Would you have any information on just how many of the 1,000 dairy farmers out there have an LDS system that would be reliable? You wouldn't?
No, I don't hear it.
It's an unfair question that Chair tells me, but I think we have some sentimentality towards the point that you made, but I just wondered if you had a gauge of it.
Our system was put in 2011, 2012, the season of that, and I understand there are a few that came since that time that are not an uncommon system.
So let's generalise it. It would be your expectation that most recent pond developments would have some sort of LDS.
Yes,
of it.
I do.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. In your original submission, page 4, regarding Rule 32, you mentioned reference to ET Pract. What is that?
Yes, I actually went back on the IPEN's website to try and find that. They have updated their comments on this, and that his paper that I gave you, this one, was reviewed in April this year, and I couldn't find that same in any comment relating to that in their current updated.
I didn't think I'd seen it before either, so thanks.
Mark.
Thank you. In your original submission, you didn't mention it here, I don't think, but you talked about blocks that are less than 20 hectares having a cumulatively having an impact on the environment as well. What sort of activities are you talking about on those smaller blocks?
Well, I'm thinking looking to future-proof, because I think that's what this plan should be doing. And you can have things where people may undertake intensive horticulture, is what I was thinking of more in that line. And whilst one 20 hectare block of either horticulture or vegetables or intensive use of whatever, dairy grazing, on itself may seem quite innocent, if you have 10 of those blocks within the catchment, cumulatively, they could make a difference. Again, I go back to, I believe it's catchment loads, not necessarily just what happens on an individual farm. Individual farms are important, what happens.
Now, if intensive winter grazing was to be managed as a permitted activity rule, and it is partly already, but we've obviously got lots of submissions on this, so we're thinking about that, what conditions should or could you have to make it so that it was permitted, but people did things to make sure that their adverse effects were minor? We've heard from Dairy NZ, and they've given us a lot of ideas as well, and you all know all those. So is that the sort of thing that we're thinking about?
I believe so. I believe good management practice can be the best thing out for that. We don't graze in the woods. Our winter grazing happens outside the watering catchment. We have a runoff. And I think, it comes back to depending on people. I don't have a personal issue with consents being needed for large winter grazing operations. I know there will be many farmers that will disagree with me on that, but that's my personal opinion, because I think we do need to take care of what their effects are on that. A good management practice should really do it. Buffer strips. I know we have buffer strips where on our runoff it's not flat land, it's sort of rolling country. And we have a lignite, a stream full of lignite that runs along the bottom of it. We would have the fences out there up to sort of, in some places, it's 10 metres out from that stream, mainly because we're following the contours of the wet area. And then we still have a buffer strip further back from that, so we've probably got a 3 to 5 metre buffer strip, again, depends on the contour of the land. How far back that goes. So I think, and I just see that as part of good management practice.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Now, for effluent application of the winter, yes. The section 42A recommends that we take out the bit about applying to the, in the winter time,
yes.
So that you could apply it in the winter time, but that, that also, the rule also says you've got to do it when the soil moisture is okay. And I've asked this question of several others as well. How is that best determined? Should farmers, for example, have their own moisture temperature monitoring device in their soil, or can you use the ES website? Or what's the best way of making sure that you're applying it when it's okay to do so?
Again, personally, I believe you should have on-farm soil moisture.
Mm-hmm.
I know even within our farm, it can vary, and what the woodlands, like we would look to the woodlands NIWA site, but the rain they get there is quite different to what we get. So, and this winter, the entire winter, because it's been so dry on our farm, we would have been able to use effluent every day so far this winter, except probably the last, you know, the last few days where there's been a bit more rain. So I do believe, they're not expensive.
Right.
They are an additional cost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all run by software. You just press the button and it, in our system, it shows you a line, what the maximum soil capacity is, and then it will tell you you've got 2 or 3 mils. And I think I heard Lloyd earlier refer to, you can do, these days, apply effluent at 1 millimetre. So, yeah.
Is temperature a thing you should consider for that as well, as moisture?
I don't feel I'm qualified to comment on that.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not the real practical farmer in the family.
Right.
So.
The last question is about overseas, and you said in your evidence and you said today that it doesn't take into account things like wetlands and riparian
yes.
strips and bush and scrub areas. Are you familiar with the overseas input standards?
Only marginally.
Right. Okay, because they do mention that in there, so.
Well, all I know is we've got a farm that 70% plus of our farm drains into a wetland, and we get no credits whatsoever for that wetland.
Is that wetland on your place?
Yes, it runs right through, well, not quite the middle, but nearly the middle of the farm. And it's protected, and we get nothing for it. We've got native bush, we've got tied up tussock areas, and you get nothing for anything you do. That was the last report I had when Fonterra did our nutrient budgets last year. I know it is forever changing. I also understand from Clint Rissman that in the physiographic zones that some zones actually have denitrification occurring below the root zone, and I think it would be really advantageous if we can find a way to include that into our nutrient budgets as well, because it's happening but we've been denied the credit for whatever occurs below there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much. Oh, I'm not finished yet.
Oh, sorry.
Actually don't have any questions for you, but just to note that I certainly understand the point you make at the bottom of your first page of your notes today, the stuff that's under 7.482, page 255, that's the little heading you have there. Understand the point you make about requiring all of the farmers to quantify their nutrient losses, and certainly in the absence of that, it would be quite hard for the council to complete its fresh water quality accounting system that it has to develop under the NPSFM going forward. So, very much understand the point you're making there. Thanks very much for preparing this material. All the suggestions you make are very sensible and practical, so we'll certainly give them serious consideration. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.